Trigger on.
Welcome, dear all, to the Dark Face Diaries. We are a World Trigger read-through podcast aiming to discuss the World Trigger manga, volume by volume. I'm Wensleydale Cheddar.
And I'm Hoven with an H. And this time we'll be tackling volume 25 of World Trigger, which covers chapters 214 to 223.
That is correct. How are you doing on this fine day?
Pretty good. I went to see Spider-Verse 2 for the second time yesterday. That movie is awesome.
Can't blame you. I'm usually the one to be like, no, why do you do all these unnecessary expenses? But this time, no, for Spider-Verse, it's worth it.
Yes.
Such a good movie. I've seen this skit by a man carrying thing regarding, I remember when movies had endings. There was a time in movie history when movies had that. But to be honest, I think the unpredictability of Spider-Verse lends itself towards having unexpected endings and not a traditional 3X structure, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of liked the concept of playing with the, okay, we're going to do a big movie split across two parts. It's just oftentimes filmmakers haven't quite gotten the knack on how to structure that tightly. You know, there's been other examples like, I guess, Back to the Future 2 and 3, Pirates of the Caribbean 2 and 3, Matrix 2 and 3, which are all similar. But yeah, I think in concept it's quite an interesting way to sort of expand the scope of your story.
Yeah, no way, it's a traditional thing. Yeah, you're quite right. But today we aren't talking about a franchise that is unpredictable in a sense. It kind of prides itself on its predictability, I suppose. So we are talking about World Trigger, Volume 25, story and art done, as always, by Daisuke Ashihara. And with the credits this time around, it's going to be a little trickier because Volume 25 is not featured yet on the Viz website. So we're assuming that the translation is done still by Caleb Cook and touch-up and lettering done by Ace Chrisman, but we have no idea about the design and the editing and whatnot. So
there's a good chance I won't edit this by the time the localized volume comes out. So if you want to record an extra thing with the credits, that's true. Hoven from the future here. I was indeed correct. It did take me long enough to edit this that volume 25 has now come out in English. So, as we said, translation by Caleb Cook, touch-up art and lettering by Ace Chrisman, designed by Paul Padarariu. The Shonen Jump series editors are Ray First and Jack Carrillo Concordia, and the graphic novel editor is Ray First.
So we are first going to do a brief synopsis, then going into the main discussion of the volume as a whole. Spoiler warnings all around, because we are in the part of the series past the anime, so we might be mentioning some things from future chapters going forward. Is that all we're supposed to mention, or was there something else?
Well, in Tears of the Kingdom, I've finally gotten around to getting to the Goron part, even though I've just been putting off the main quest for ages and ages and ages and just exploring the rest of the map, but it's
okay,
fine.
Perfect. That's obligatory Zelda mention each time. All right, let's move on to the main discussion.
The battle simulations commence! We launch into day two of the away mission tests as the provisional teams get to grips with the highly complex strategy game that the board of higher-ups have decided to test their skills on, controlling chibified versions of themselves and their trigger sets. Some squads sink, some squads swim, as Sewer's Squad 7 find themselves among the stragglers of the pack. However, Mizukami's Squad 9 find themselves pulling ahead of the rest with the captain's unorthodox methods. Will Mizukami's trick be caught out? How will the various captains respond to the curveball special assignments that are thrown their way without warning? Will Katori be the kind of gamer who gets her squad's Twitch livestream demonetized? The answer to that last question is, of course, yes.
She has lots of heated gaming moments.
At the top of all this is so much better on a reread.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think following this week to week, I didn't have a clear idea of what the teams were and how I was supposed to respond to their makeups. So a lot of the individual character moments and scenes just seemed like these isolated little events that didn't contribute towards much. Rereading it in volume form with a bit of an idea of where it's going, you just get a clearer idea of how the different team dynamics are forming, and like what little running gags are going on, which squads are adapting to which sort of strategies, which ones aren't doing as well. And you just see the arc of that so much more clearly.
I feel like this is the mantra of World Trigger readership. Oh, this is so much better on a reread.
I mean, I'm reading Jujutsu Kaisen right now, or just finished getting caught up to it, and God, I think that series might be a very similar case for me. I have no idea who half the characters are and how they do what they do.
Well, dear listeners, if we reach the, I think it was 1,000 goal on the Patreon, you can choose for us to do a Jujutsu Kaisen retrospective.
Hells yeah!
Yeah, I felt this volume was pretty good. It was basically business as usual. We got some focus on Mizukami and a taste of the failures of Katori squad really getting her down. It was kind of like deconstructing a bit of her selfishness. And there's a low-stakes character progressing, simmering, that I'm focused to see where it goes. You're quite trying to say that, like, it seems like these isolated moments that didn't seem to amount to much earlier, it seems like there's a plan towards that, so I quite like this. And I do wish we had a bit more focus with Yuma and Chika, but I suppose once you get to the actual neighborhood, it'll be the time to shine.
We did get a nice little character moment for Yuma here, where he anticipates a lot about the Amoy mission tests because of what Yugo told him.
Yeah, Yuma getting a moment where he remembers being told something about his dad. It seems like the first time in forever since he had a moment like this.
I think having a rival character to the point of view squad, which is Sewers, of Mizukami, figure out that you can just have one person control multiple agents and game the system right from early on is a really clever move. Because for people like me, who pretty much just assumed this would be an exploit from early on, it acknowledges that without too much preamble. But then for other readers who don't really cotton on to the advantages of that, it lets other squads deduce that at a very natural pace. It's a really good compromise between those two.
Yeah, the decision to focus on Mizukami in general is pretty damn great. Like, not only is he an unexpected dark horse here, where we expect the big focal points to be the conflict between Osamu and Katori, there's the struggles of Wakamura, and maybe, like, Ninomiya and Emma. And suddenly here's this very credible threat in such a different setting for World Trigger. Even in this actionless slice of life arc, he manages to create a climax for this volume with his controversial decision, sparking a storm of discourse among the A-ranks. He's like a Twitter main character. It's great.
Also just, you know, I made my Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy gaffe last episode, but maybe it wasn't too off base, since with this volume, it seems that Ashihara fancies himself a Douglas Adams type figure with involvement in even the video game adaptation of this work, where he's like, hey, Shueisha, please fund a strategy game of World Trigger. Look, I've even come up with a pit for the rules. Can you do this?
I feel like it's pretty bad marketing, since Katori keeps roasting the quality of the game, and no, this is the devs of the game were a great morons, and then Katori chimes in like, did someone say A rank? And Katori's like, no!
Katori is 100% that kind of gamer that thinks that turn-based combat is outdated and that all RPG franchises should just go the way of Final Fantasy and switch to real-time combat.
Katori, I do not stan.
Katori be like, nerf the AI! And Ui's like, it's PvP, Katori. And Katori's like, I don't care! Just nerf the AI!
I've just realized why Suwa is smiling less in this arc. This is for two reasons. Like, first of all, he's got Katori on his mind. But second of all, he can't smoke. So whichever influences that more, you make the call.
Ooh, it's a tough call. This kind of brings me around to the volume covers, because we haven't talked about them in a while. And I really like comparing Volume 24 and this one. Because with Volume 24, you show kind of the uneasiness and the friction between Osamu and Katori, the way they're looking at each other, with the affable Oki and Ui just kind of chilling in the front, and Suwa just doing his best to manage the whole thing. He's not quite thrilled, but he's not overwhelmed either. He's just barely, you know, keeping things together. Meanwhile, you look at the Volume 25 with Murakami Squad 9, and he looms so large over the others, and he's juggling the board pieces in his hand. I really love how it emphasises the excessive control he has over the team. Also, the little detail of Teruya looking inquisitive that's sort of been in his direction. It mirrors her being the one to raise suspicions at the end of this volume. It's probably my favorite volume cover, along with the volume 12 one with Natsu.
I do love the implication that, like, I know that this manga has actual antagonists, actual proper villains to the series, but I imagine him and Oikawa from Haikyuu, who's inexplicably, whenever Shueisha has a feature of many different villains and antagonists from a series, it, like, always features Oikawa from Haikyuu. And I feel like Mizukami is a pretty similar antagonist, in which he's just a kid, but, like, he's framed as such a malicious chess master.
I love the idea that after the match with Tamakoma and Oji squad, Mizukami just comes up to Oji and is like, okay, do you have any advice on what I could do better? And Oji's like, oh, well, of course. You need to use board games as a metaphor for how skilled you are. And you just juggle the pieces. And he just kind of shows his chess piece juggling technique.
Oh my god, he's a cross between Code Geass and Cowboy Bebop now. I do love that he also has, I think, another reference on his shirt NFT, because his shirt looks like the cervical logo from Attack on Titan. I do love Mizukami's sitcom antics, trying to keep his scheme hidden. It's great. Especially the proverbs bit.
The game mechanics and the match descriptions, it read as a bit excessive to me on a first read, but in retrospect, kind of seeing how a couple of days have played out, it seems like it's more there to be a vertical slice just to demonstrate what the challenge they're facing in, and the actual simulation tactics employed in the matches seem to be talked about more broadly in terms of the grander strategy, which I think is a good move. I don't think I could really internalize all these mechanics enough to have an involved match, although maybe Ashihara will surprise me there.
See, I feel like this is the pattern. You think, this is way too complicated, I can't focus on that. And then Ashihara is like, no, you don't understand. This is actually way too complicated, but I'm simplifying it.
Yeah, I mean, like, even acknowledges it in that one bit where he describes a few of the matches and then is like, and then etc. Okay, you get the picture, etc, etc. They lose the match. Yes.
Yada, yada, yada. They lose. Coming back to Mizukami a bit, I like that Oki picked up on his squad members' plan in the end. That it kind of seems like Mizukami's squad mates kind of know what he's about, apart from Ikoma, who just does his own thing.
Well, I kind of noted, it's kind of lucky that Squad 7 got the one other brain cell possessor of Ikoma Squad who'd actually gotten onto this, because I don't know how helpful Kai would be, because I don't remember.
I guess we'll see in the next volume.
Yes.
Yeah, he is the first one in Squad 7 to raise the shogi comparison to. I wonder if he maybe had a few practice games with Mizukami or whatever. I've got another note on Oki, which is that he showed some emotional intelligence by immediately praising Osamu's tactics when he saw that Four Eyes was being distracted by, oh no, my squad mates are winning in the game. When I was involved, they were losing. He was preventing him from becoming Wakamura, basically.
Yeah, no, that was a really sweet little moment. Sua noticing that Osamu was feeling miffed and left out when they scored the first win. Yeah, it's a very sweet scene.
Yeah, Osamu, I noticed, was speaking up a lot in the second day. It kind of seemed like he really took Sua's encouragement to heart. And he does seem to be someone who has a lot of ideas that might not be perfectly crystallized yet. And it comes through in the way he wrote his answer. The feature of Osamu and Oji kind of thinking outside the box, it seems to be the trend.
Yeah. One thing I found interesting, when Sua brings up the schedule at the start of this volume, the last day of the week isn't included. Because at the top of this whole arc, we've been primed that the first phase takes place over a whole week, the second one's over 2 days. So that makes me wonder whether it's going to be a results day for this phase, or if it's going to be some kind of mystery challenge that we don't know about, which is quite in keeping with how Border like to organise things, very sort of obfuscating.
Maybe it's going to be a beach simulation episode.
Yeah, just like a rest day. That was my other thought.
Wakamura's character progression is not just a downward spiral like I thought at first. It's much less linear than that. He gets these kind of glimpses of helpfulness that may not make up for his insecure leadership quite yet, but maybe building up to something, like the thing with the headset translating text-to-speech to Hughes. But yeah, poor Wakamura. If you think about it, he just has to keep showing his whole ass to the entirety of Border day after day, and it wasn't much of his choice.
Yeah, Yeah. Kikuchi Hara is just that one guy in a group project who always points out the problems with everyone else's idea, but never offers any of their own.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely get that. Wow. Yeah.
100%. I have had to deal with people like that, and it's not fun.
Mm, yeah. It's always like, well, what do you want to do? I like the framing device of cutting to Utagawa squad when Tachikawa and Izumi want to watch a different squad. It's like, those slackers should have figured it out earlier, but yeah. We, of course, get the best quote of the volume, "I want to grind four eyes."
Into the dust. Context, in a video game. But we have isolated that dialogue so many times in casual conversation.
This is for all you Osamu and Katori shippers. I love how in the scores for day two, out of squad seven, Katori got the least amount of points from A ranks. She is not a favorite.
Because I've not really been considering their squad that much over the course of the arc as a whole. I do find it interesting. You have the little interaction between Inukai and Kakizaki, where Kakizaki, he hints that there is more to his picking of Kageyura and Inukai than Inukai initially assumes, and I'm interested to see if that has any kind of payoff going forward.
It's a very interesting exchange given how much they bicker. Perhaps Kakizaki wanted to set himself up as this kind of force of peace in Border, as in he is going to tame those two wild animals just biting at each other.
I recall on a prior podcast, speaking of this squad, Nova raised the idea of wanting to see Kageyura's side effect and the effects of it explored more. And I think we do see that in a sense, but I think the way that Ashihara wants to tackle that is in how it affects the immediate interpersonal relations, which I think that Inukai scene touches on, with how he is acting a certain way because he's aware of what Kageyura's insecurities around him are.
Yeah, this should be a really good arc for Kageyura if we do get more moments with him in that regard.
I really like that we're seeing more of a protective, supportive side to him with Taichi. It's a side of him that I think we saw a bit of with him and Aima, and it's really nice to see that come out some more.
Yeah, it was such a heartwarming moment given what he was going through. That was very cute. And you're quite right, it was quite similar to how it turned out that he wanted to try winning at the rank wars more so that Emma has a chance of going to the away team with Chika. So there's the bit where Kitora gets Azuma to help her, and I love how it was Ashihara being comically meticulous in his writing, as we tend to roast him about. I do like how he realized through it that his purpose here is guidance, that he should be more hands-on when it comes to guiding the younger agents. I also like how Ashihara wanted to draw Kubo's army of dismembered hands and random birds for no reason.
That scene with Azuma kind of puts into perspective the broader idea that Border is perhaps trying to get at with these tests. And it's that theme of communication. Kind of the microcosm of it is that we see it in Sewer Team's initial downfall in round one. Improving this not only between themselves, but with other provisional squads, they manage to overcome the wall that Mizukami presents later in the next volume or two. And it could well be that Border split the teams into provisional ones to encourage that sort of cross-party cooperation, with how much work and camaraderie the various teams would have to put in during the B-rank wars and assignments. It's only natural that there would be lingering solidarity to want said teammates to succeed. After all, Border wants as many agents on the away mission as possible.
Azuma was in a squad with everyone. He's such a slut. I don't know why I use those words.
I don't think that's a very good analogy when we consider the age of the agents he was with.
I retract that statement. I'm sorry.
But yeah, it's probably less about purely the elimination of the weak links for the battle sims and more about how the agents are able to adapt and support each other, because that's much more useful for having the maximal amount of agents on the trip that are qualified.
Speaking of the agents getting along perhaps a bit too well, Team Murakami gets into the problem of having time-crunchy tasks by committee. It's one of the more interesting elements of this volume, and so is Hiyami self-leading Team Murakami. It was great and quite fitting for the quick learner to take her lessons about leadership to heart.
If Murakami isn't going to captain correctly, I'll just do it myself. Fuck it.
Is it just me, or is Hiyami's catchphrase, "of course," because she kept saying it when I was laying out the reasoning behind the party choice earlier, and then now she's doing that again. Urushima definitely seems to be an assassin-like character. He's even got silencer equipped. But what would silencer even do in a video game? I guess it maybe has a very video game specific dynamic here, like Bagworm does, that is different from reality.
Yeah, I forget what the mechanic was where, I think there was a mechanic where it ignored auto-homing or something, I'm not sure. Mm. There was something in the volume that kind of implied, because you employed this maneuverable or stealthy trigger, you get to ignore a certain action from the enemy, but I don't remember what exactly it was because this game is complicated. Mm.
It's quite cute that the way Yuma and Urashima are very quickly making friends. On the seventh day, they're going to be BFFs, and I wonder if Yuma will want to return to his squad at all.
See, like, I like the idea, because I roasted Urashima a bit last episode, where I was like, oh, he thinks he's so slick for working out the stipend thing. And now I'm thinking, maybe Yuma agrees with him. He's like, oh, he is really slick to work that out. Because as soon as he raises, like, damn, it sucks to be betrayed by one of your own, huh? And he's like, oh, we just know each other very well on the team, I swear.
I love the moment where Urashima is salting at Yuma for not being able to read Japanese properly. Then I kind of imagined Urashima being like, ah, you know nothing, do you, Kuga? And Yuma is like, I don't know nothing. I just don't know what I don't know.
At first, I didn't realize that Kashio was putting up the front. So I was thinking, like, Mizukami, I'm just going to make up BS to keep Teruya off my ass. And then Kashio is like, wow, Mizukami, you are so wise.
In a way, it would be funnier if he was doing that, because he just seems so earnest. In fact, I think that's my interpretation. During the first day, the border staff were like, lol, the agents write like teachers' pets. And on the second day, we see the answer sheet, and it's the most textbook interpretation shit ever. I love it. I like the hidden focus behind the special assignment being analyzing task distribution. It was a fine, devious kind of hook, which is what made the management evaluation quite fun on the second day. I wonder if actually, like, delegating the special assignment was also meant to push the agents into realizing they can take each other's units, like Mizukami did with all of them. This kind of play conditioning.
Yeah, it's, as I said, like, we could have just had the route where they're play conditioned, but Mizukami thought one step ahead and already thought of that. So him doing that kind of helped them put that together a bit quicker.
Yeah.
I love Konami's comments on Mizukami. I would have chomped down on his poofy hair and ripped it out by the roots.
They're great. I guess my last note is that these volumes are working out great when it comes to chapter distribution. It seems like if all goes well, it will get around one volume per day of the test, then probably like a few for the 3-day battle, and we might just run through every squad on the volume cover.
Yeah, that was my prediction last time. It's a little bit off with next volume. Like, day 3 runs slightly past it.
Okay.
So it'll be interesting to see how that affects things, if we're going to end up getting a shorter day at any point to account for that. My last note, oh my god, first time in ages, I've actually got one more note.
Yeah.
After you finish yours. I like Tachikawa's, proverbs are valuable. A wise guru. He's just giving off the energy of some guy who just went on his gap year, went on like his spiritual retreats. And he's all like sort of faux new age spiritual.
Yeah, I like how Tachikawa was roasting all of them. That was great. All right, shall we get to the Q&A?
Let's do it.
So we have just one question from Anna. This is regarding the children yelling McDonald's meme. It's a fairly old meme from a few years ago. Essentially, it's a triangle graph of children yelling, McDonald's, McDonald's, McDonald's. Then at the top, it's like, we have food at home. And then at the bottom, pulls into the drive-thru as the children cheer, orders a single black coffee and leave. So Anna wants us to assign the characters from the provisional squads to this meme.
The way I was going to structure this was kind of give what I think are the prime examples of each one, then go in a number order. So I think the prime example of food at home is Ninomiya, because it is just very absolute. We are just doing this by the book. We're doing this the way I say we're doing it, and there's not going to be any kind of dissenting. Then I think the prime example of McDonald's, McDonald's, McDonald's is OG Squad, where everyone's just in it to have fun and just for the good vibes. And then I think Black Coffee's probably Mizukami. I feel like Black Coffee is like, it exemplifies there's a disconnect between the person in charge and the rest of them, or at least one particular key figure in the rest of them.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I think Mizukami's squad fits that perfectly.
Okay, so I think that Squad 7 with Sewer, let's start with the most familiar ones. So Katori is definitely like McDonald's. Sewer and Osama would be, we have food at home. And maybe Ui as well. Oki would be the one to troll the child and go through the drive-thru.
See, for me, Sewer, I put the squad as a whole in the food at home category. Because I think even though, yeah, Katori has big McDonald's energy, it's all about the ratio and the amount of sway that the McDonald's has over them. And in this one, it's pretty low because no one else is really in Katori's boat here.
Okay, I'm interested in the team dynamic specifically. So I'll do select teams, but with all of them. So like OG squad, Suji is We Have Food at Home, Ikoma, Nirei, and I think probably Abishima as well on McDonald's. And OG pretends to order black coffee, but also actually orders some McNuggets. So he reverse trolls them. And when it comes to Mizukami squad 9, I think all of them are We Have Food at Home, but Mizukami just orders a truckload of black coffees and throws everything else out of the fridge, something like that.
Squad 1 for me, Utagawa's squad, I put as a We Have Food at Home. Yeah, you have Urashima, who he's a little bit more on the coffee or McDonald's side of things, but then the unit as a whole is very cohesive and very much kind of falls in line.
Yeah. Urashima definitely has coffee energy. Kakizaki squad would be interesting because I think Kagura and Inukai would argue specifically not about whether they have food at home or McDonald's, but they would argue about the menu. Nono and Kakizaki would be We Have Food at Home. Taichi would be precisely in the McDonald's corner. But Inukai would have a bit of coffee, but still McDonald's.
I put the squad as a whole in the coffee camp just because it doesn't actually really fit them, but it's just because they have a perfectly even distribution of food at home to McDonald's energy. So I'd kind of lean them towards coffee by default, I guess.
Zoe squad, Kai, McDonald's, obviously. Kikuchihara, obviously coffee. Tanaoka, Hana, food at home. Kitazawa is kind of like split between McDonald's and food at home, I think.
Yeah, I think for this one, because the general vibe of this squad is Kikuchihara being annoyed at how loudly goofy the other members are to put up with, I feel like it leans the energy of the squad more in the McDonald's direction for me. So
Kurama's squad, we don't really have to discuss because obviously he would be able to manipulate everyone into ordering whatever he wants because of his superior acting skills. Come on! Kadera, they are all food at home. There's no dissent. Absolutely not.
So I put Kuruma in McDonald's mainly because I think Rui, Korai, and Yuba all have enough McDonald's energy.
Fair enough.
And then for Kodera, put in food at home. There's no lollygagging and silly nonsense with this lot.
I already discussed Squad 7. Ninomiya, I think that all basically food at home gang. Ninomiya was actually black coffee for me, I think. Chika and Yuzuru together can be like typical children and would be ordering McDonald's. And Emma, if Chika does that as well, then he would be McDonald's too, probably. Already discussed Mizukami. Murakami is offered a time.
Yeah, no, I put that as well. And then for Wakamura, I put black coffee, but without the screaming kids part, and it's just Wakamura ordering the coffee out of choice paralysis. It's like the rest of his squad are like, all right, you know, shall we get some McDonald's? Yeah, let's get some McDonald's. And so they pull up and they're like, Wakamura, you decide what you're going to have. And Wakamura just sits there for like 2 solid minutes, just like, fuck, what do I get? What will please everyone? I don't know. Then he just ends up just ordering a coffee and everything.
So great. Okay, shall we round off?
Let's do it.
That is going to do it for the 25th holy fuck episode of Duckface Diaries. You can find us wherever you listen to your podcast. Just search for Duckface Diaries and we'll be there. Links to all the platforms are at patreon.com/WednesdayDaleCheddar. Everything is in the pinned post. That's also what helps me pay the bills. So if you want us to devote more time to making the show better, consider supporting us there. In return, you can get your name in the YouTube credits or a World Trigger Duckface avatar. Plus, you can help us reach more ambitious goals like doing a special podcast to cover the anime filler arc or covering the rest of Border Briefing File. Remember that much like the neighborhood, the YouTube algorithm is a dark abyss of sorrows and woes from which channels like these never resurface. And what helps us navigate it is liking, subscribing, and sharing the podcast with a friend. on the YouTube channel and the same RSS feed, you get access to not only Duckface Diaries, but Manga Mosaic, a collection of podcasts and video essays on other manga titles, short and long alike, on the same channel. And wherever you listen to your podcasts, you can listen to Podcast Mon Adventures, our new retrospective where we cover the Pokemon special manga arc by arc, along with the host of the Pink Isle pod, Henry Kathman. Where can people find you, Hoven?
You can find me on Twitter at Hoven with an H, and you can find my pretty much defunct YouTube channel, also Hoven with an H.
Once again, you can find all the links to all this and every single guest that we had on in the pinned post at patreon.com/WednesdayDaleCheddar or in the description to wherever you're listening to this. What's up? It's your MB, Wensleydale from the future. And this time I'm doing the edits. We're splitting the editing duties in half next year, so you might be seeing more of those in the future. But first things first, we have a link tree now. So that's linktr.ee/WednesdayDaleCheddar. You can find Duckface Diaries there, you can find Spockas Mon Adventures there, Hoven's Hideaway, all our new socials as well. By the way, we both have Blue Sky now. We're not only on the dreaded initial app, I guess, anymore. So follow us there. You can ask us for invite codes if you don't have any yet. And yeah, linktr.ee/WednesdayDaleCheddar is where you can find all that. And also all the people we collaborated with and all the projects. I have also linked those there. So go ahead and check it out. Yeah. Send us emails, questions, comments, suggestions at WednesdayDale012@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at Duckface Diaries or individual Twitters at WednesdayCheddar, at Hoven with an H, and follow Podcast Mon Adventures at Podcast Mon Manga. A sincere thank you to Milo Jack Stilitz for composing music for us, an orchestral rendition of Giri Giri, the first opening sequence for World Trigger, and an orchestral rendition of Ashita no Hikari, the second opening sequence for the show in question. You can find his work at soundcloud.com/Milo-Jack-Stilitz. What are we covering next time?
Next time we'll be reading Volume 26, which covers chapters 224 to 231.
Nice. So we have actually reached a volume whose cover was released very recently with Kidazoe Squad. I wanted Kikuchihara on the cover for a while now, and it's quite great. It's quite a good cover too, actually. I like that the World Trigger title is behind the characters because it makes it more easy for me on the thumbnails. I don't have to redraw something or just include a bunch of the title in the thumbnail, which is quite bothersome.
It's a bit less strong in terms of indicating the character dynamics as the last one, but it is an interesting angle at least, the three-quarter look from it.
Yeah. Check out my and Spinning Ash's Nuzlocke on the Patreon. It's quite good. We've reached Kanto at the time of this recording. There's some interesting plot-relevant stuff, so I hope you like it. But this was the 25th episode of Duckface Diaries, and as always, it's time to bugger off!